WMNF.com.
And support for WMNF comes from our members and Happy Feet Plus. Since 1985, Happy Feet Plus has been providing healthy footwear solutions, including brands such as Birkenstock, Finn, Comfort, and Kinnock. Massage sandals. Styles and selections at happyfeet.com.
And a very good afternoon to you. Welcome to WMNF 88.5. I'm Norman B, doing Midpoint today. Coming up later in the show, let's talk about women in politics. I know you have opinions, and I'd like you to share them. First, I want you to know about the suffrage movement. My guest, Sally Roche Wagner, has a new book that explores the subject in depth, and I'm delighted to welcome her to Midpoint on WMNF. So get yourself comfortable as the lovely, as the wonderful Etta James prepares us for the interview. Suffrage movements is edited and compiled by Sally Roche Wagner. It is an absolutely incredible read. I highly recommend it. Sally Roche Wagner, welcome to WMNF.
Thank you, Norman.
What a terrific read this is. You've gone to a lot of trouble, a lot of work to put this together. I want to ask you as many questions as I can, and I want to start off by asking you. And this, I don't know if this might seem like an odd question, but I'm curious. What's the difference between a suffragist and a suffragette?
Suffragette was used by the British suffragists, suffragettes, and it became a term of derision in the United States. Suffragist was what the women here called themselves.
See me coming from the other side of the pond. I sort of grew up with suffragette, and I saw, and I kept thinking maybe I've got it wrong. But no, you've explained it so well for me. The suffragette movements. Here we are in 2019, and I there's so much, as I said, so much to talk about. But I want to start here, right now, here where we are, and how it pertains, what's gone on through the ages, as you so carefully write in your book and tell us about. So much has gone on, but here we are in 2019, and it's, for some people, I'm sure, it seems like we haven't gone very far. Can you talk about that?
You know, it's interesting to me that in the 1850s, the idea of equal pay for equal work was really old hat. It had been around that concept for quite a while. It was a time when women were making a third to a half of what men made. Now, let's cut to 150 years later, yeah, and we're making a little more than 75%. For women of color, it's even less than that. At this rate, it's 150 years before we get pay equity. That's crazy. And I think not knowing that the women in the first wave of feminism, the woman suffrage movement, were raising the issues of equal pay, reproductive choice, violence against women should be ended, you know, you name it, they were raising it. Not knowing that, we don't know that we're part of a continuum moving freedom forward.
So well put. And I have to ask you this, because I don't know that you know the definitive answer, Sally, but gosh, I've got to ask you, why are we in this turmoil? Why are we in this state where we don't recognize women for the same way we recognize men, pay women the same way? How has this lingered on like this?
You know, this is a question that the rest of the world is pointing a finger at us and asking, why in the United States, when you believe that you are the pillar of democracy, are you so far behind the rest of the world in terms of women's rights? We don't have an equal rights amendment today. We're one of, I think, now two nations, with maybe Saudi Arabia, who have failed to ratify the Declaration of Rights of Women through the United Nations. CEDAW. You know, it's, we're kind of an embarrassment in the rest of the world's eyes. Why has it happened?
Yeah.
I wish I knew the answer. I know that history is a piece of it, and the way in which we function through expediency, where we say, you know, we just have to take a little bit of a movement at a time, rather than saying, you know what, we want the whole thing and we want it now. And that process of expediency is excruciatingly slow, and it means that time after time we win the battle, but we lose the larger war for freedom.
Yes, and isn't it a shame that we have to categorize it as war for freedom? Isn't that such a pity?
And perhaps that I shouldn't be even using that, but it does feel like the process of, you have to battle. You are not able to just simply sit down, dialogue, negotiate, and move freedom forward.
Yes.
You come up against a brick wall.
Sally, I don't want to far too stray from talking about your book, and I don't want to go off on too many tangents, but it does lead me to ask you, in putting your book together, collating all the information, and just observing what you just said just now, do you think that misogyny, it's not peculiar to America, of course, but is that the sort of underlying reason? And also, I hate bringing this up, but is religion part of it as well? The sort of doctrinarian points of view for some very sort of odd things that we still carried over. Does that all sort of tie into this thing of women not having equal rights?
Well, let me quote use the ideas to answer that of the two major theoreticians of the woman suffrage movement, Matilda Joslyn Gage and Elizabeth Cady Stanton. And this was their analysis. The idea of the Bible, that woman is to be under the authority of man because of the sin of Eve, continues through to the New Testament, all the way to St. Paul. And it's the idea that women must be under the authority of men. And that then becomes canon law, and it becomes translated into common law, which results in the Blackstone Code that said that when women marry, they become dead in the law. The two shall become one, and the one is the man. And the husband subsumes it's hard to conceptualize it,
yes.
The very existence of the female once they marry. So that means that a woman had no right legally to her own body. Husbands could rape, beat their wives legally, as long as they didn't inflict permanent damage. Women had no right to their property, to their earnings. They took a job, their husband got the wages. They had no right to their children. They didn't have equal guardianship, and besides that, a husband could will away an unborn child on his deathbed, and that child would be given to its rightful owner when it was born. Women had no legal existence, and the major theoreticians trace that right back to Christianity.
You know, as you were saying, what you're just saying, I'm getting chills just thinking about what that all means. It's astonishing. It's just sort of, it's hard to sort of comprehend. It's hard to take in. And here we are. These things, people are still thinking like that right now in 2019. Let me remind my listeners, I'm talking to Sally Roche Wagner. Her book is called The Women's Suffrage Movement. And it really is. It's got so much information here. She's collated writings from all over the place. And there's a foreword. There's a wonderful foreword by Gloria Steinem. Sally, I want to talk now to something which you touch on, and I think a lot of people are just not aware of, and that is indigenous people, indigenous women, the Iroquois. Can, for my listeners, can you just go into that just a little bit?
Well, here is the humbling reality. Women have had political voice on this land for at least 1,000 years. Well, we're celebrating next year 100 years. I'm specifically in the book pointing to the Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois Confederacy, the Six Nations in what is today upstate New York, and the Haudenosaunee for 1,000 years, continuing to this moment, clan mothers have the responsibility for nominating the chiefs that will represent them, the male chiefs. They have the responsibility for nominating, holding them in office, and removing them if necessary. It's a balance of authority, they say, and the men must listen to the women. And if they don't make decisions for the seventh generation to come, the clan mothers warn them. They give them 3 warnings, and then they have the responsibility to remove them. One of the qualifications that is absolutely essential is that this man cannot have abused a woman.
These are parts of the book that I think are so important, because I think they're undiscovered by so many people. When we talk about the suffrage movements, we're not really thinking about the Iroquois. And you give us so much information in this book. You've been studying this topic now for a long time, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Nearly 50 years.
Nearly 50 years. And you've managed to put 50 years of study into this book, into this volume. And it really is. I can't stress this enough. It really is an absolute terrific read. You know, I've got to tell you this, Sally, and I'm going to be totally honest with you. Whenever I get a book which I think is sort of somewhat academic, I'm always just a little bit hesitant, because sometimes they're very dry and very, you know, just a little hard going. This is not hard going at all. It is just an enjoyable book. I just wanted to make sure you knew that I felt that.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. In putting the book together, and since you've had it published, and we're all reading it now, have you had comments from people? Have you had feedback where there are certain parts of your book that are standouts, that have caused more interest than others, other parts of your book?
Well, let me give you a couple examples. One is the first woman to announce her candidacy for President of the United States. She spent election night in jail, and it was a result of being arrested under the Comstock Acts. This was a time when religious fundamentalists got legislation passed through state legislatures and the federal government defining obscenity or allowing a state censor, a political censor, Anthony Comstock, to determine what was obscene in the United States of America and bring legal proceedings against anyone who was doing what he believed to be obscene. That meant anyone giving information about anything to do with sex and anything to do with reproduction.
Yes.
Victoria Woodhull had, in 1872, exposed two Me Too incidents in her newspaper. One of them was the most famous minister in America who was using his position to sexually coerce his parishioners. The second one was two Wall Street operatives who had systematically gotten a 15 and a 16-year-old girl drunk and then sexually violated them. Hashtag Me Too is not new.
Yes, yes. Oh, gosh. So, again, you put these points across so well, Sally. I really appreciate it. The Women's Suffrage Movement is Sally Roche Wagner's new book. It is an absolute delightful read. It really is. Lots of information in here. Two topics I've got to touch on while I have you here. One is the ugly truth about racism and the suffrage movement.
Yes.
You expose this, I think is the right word, deliberately and very eloquently in your book. And I'd like you right now just to give me and my listeners just a little overview of the sadness of the suffrage movement and racism.
Mm-hmm. I think it really reaches its zenith. It becomes institutionalized as policy of the movement after a merger of the two organizations. The American Woman Suffrage Association had focused on the states giving women the right to vote. The National had focused on the Federal Amendment. The National American, when it merged, became a states' rights organization. They allowed their state auxiliaries to basically have autonomy to do what they wanted. Some of them segregated. They worked for the vote for white women only, and they worked for Jim Crow laws, voter suppression laws. They made the argument, the National American Woman Suffrage Association made the argument, give women the vote because woman suffrage is a way to maintain white native-born supremacy. White women outnumber Negroes and immigrants, and if you give us the vote, we'll keep white native-born supremacy going.
Mm.
That, I think, is the place of accountability.
Yes.
You know, as we move into 2020, it's, do we celebrate this? Do we commemorate this? Well, how can we celebrate when not everybody's at the table?
Right.
The work of those white suffragists ended up resulting in not, it wasn't completely their responsibility, but they didn't resist the voter suppression laws. In fact, they strengthened them. And the result was that African American women and men didn't really have the vote until the 1960s. With the voter registration, the removal of the Jim Crow laws,
yeah,
of the voter registration. And we still have voter suppression today that we're fighting.
Yes.
So my thought is that for 2020, we need to do a truth and reconciliation. We need to acknowledge this ugly racism of the organized women's movement. And we need to take accountability for it. And once we do that, then we can look at the possibility of celebration.
Mm.
But I think not before.
Oh, my goodness. God, I love talking to you. Sally Roche Wagner is my guest. The Women's Suffrage Movement is her new book, with a foreword by Gloria Steinem. I want to touch on now a subject which I've talked about. I should just preface this by saying I've been doing talk radio in one form or another for more years than most people have had hot dinners. And one subject that I touched on many, many years ago, and this is over, probably 30 years ago, Sally, that I touched on this subject. And I went on the air and said that I didn't think, as a man, I had the right to tell a woman what to do with her body, vis-a-vis abortion, or anything to do with a woman's body for that matter, but specifically abortion. And at the time, there was a senator whose name, he's now dead, but I won't give him the glory of mentioning him, but he was a horribly sort of verbose conservative. Anyway, he used to make a lot of horrible statements about abortion and et cetera. And I went on the air and said that I didn't think it was anything to do with men, and men shouldn't have the rights to say anything about women's rights. But things haven't really changed. Things are still going on. There's still, I think it's Alabama has now banned abortion. I know this is not a chapter in your book, so to speak, but I know that you have some thoughts on this, and I'd love to hear from you, just your take on where we are in 2019, coming up to 2020, on abortion.
Let me give you some background on that.
Yeah.
In the book, there is a woman, Ida Craddock, who is arrested under the Comstock Acts for distributing a birth control manual.
Yes.
Women taking control of their own bodies. She knows the judge is going to just throw the book at her under the Comstock Acts. And she also knows that Comstock has threatened that once she gets out of prison, he's going to rearrest her for the second book that she wrote, Birth Control. She kills herself the night before she is to be sentenced, and she leaves a suicide note. The suicide note is in the book. I think she may be the first martyr that we know of to leave a suicide note, martyr for reproductive choice.
Yes.
Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Matilda Joslyn Gage, number of the other women in the movement believed in the rights of the unborn. And they said the most sacred, the most important right of all is that the unborn has a right to be chosen and wanted, that no child should be born out of chance or out of being forced into the world.
Right.
And so I think that position that, you know, how are you going to ensure that a child is wanted and chosen only if the mother is the one who decides when she will give birth, the conditions under which she will give birth?
Yes, absolutely. Sally, when you finished putting this book together, and I'm wondering how long, you've been studying for, as you say, almost 50 years on this topic. How long did it actually take you? Was it 50 years to put the book together, or just when you sat down to say, I'm going to do this compendium, I'm going to do this anthology, I'm going to put this book together? How long did that actually take?
It was a couple years.
Yeah.
But I had gathered so many of these materials that it wasn't starting from scratch. It was, I love to communicate with the dead. And so I gather anything I can that they've written, and
right.
I've done that over years and years. So much of it was going to my files.
Yes.
And saying, you know, and the difficult thing was choosing from so many incredible sources, but giving people an opportunity to hear directly from the people who made the history.
Is there I think this is a difficult question, or maybe an impossible question to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there a standout for you? Is there one, I don't know, one quote or one voice that you would direct everybody to go to in your book?
There are so many. You know, one pops into mind, but it's not that it's more important than any other. But it is Elizabeth Cady Stanton, toward the end of her life, writes about the need for cooperation. And she says, and this became her motto, the few have no right to the luxuries of life, while the many are denied the necessities.
Yes, yes.
And if I could do one more.
Sure, please. Absolutely.
Gage.
Yeah.
Okay. Matilda Joslyn Gage, in her, it was a flag presentation speech to the local regiment when they sent off to war. She, you know, presented the flag to them that they'd carry into battle. And she said, "There will be no permanent peace in this country until there is absolute equality for every group. Men and women, rich and poor, black and white, native-born and immigrant." It was an absolutely inclusive vision. And, you know, you look at that today and you say, I wonder if the Civil War is really over.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Sally, I love listening to you. I love your voice. I could listen to you for hours. Just reading.
I could listen to you for hours.
Well, thank you so much. We've got a mutual admiration society.
There we go.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you about this book in the fact that you've put this together and Gloria Steinem wrote the foreword to it, and here am I raving on about it. Have you given this to any of the ladies that are running for presidents? I'm just thinking that this is one of those books they should all read.
You know what? I think I will ask publicity in Penguin if they will do that.
Yes.
And I'll say, Norman told you to.
That would be great. So whilst we're talking about, just jumping ahead right now to 2019, 2020, without going into all the gory details, we know who the president is right now, and we know that the people are running. And it's very interesting to see so many ladies taking the opportunity, sort of grasping the mantle, so to speak. I'd just like to get Sally Roche Wagner's viewpoints on the turnaround here, if you like, of how many women are actually putting their face forward.
You know, I really take my leadership from the Native women and African American women. Women of color are really the voices that are leading the world forward right now. And there is a strong tradition in Native cultures of the feminine voice, the female voice rising. And this is the moment when it will happen. And I think as we look especially at African American women and their leadership in, you know, if we look at voting patterns with white women and African American women, I think we can see where leadership is coming from today.
Yes.
And I think that this is the moment of rising of women, but it is most importantly the rising of women of color.
Yes. You know, I had a guest on the program just after Mr. Trump was elected president. And this is a very learned professor who has lots of very critical points on what's going on socially and economically and politically in the world. And he said, he made this statement that he thought that Mr. Trump being president would be the best thing that could happen because we would all start to rethink what we want for our country. Any thoughts on that, Sally?
I think he's the best organizer I have ever seen.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I think that, you know, this is the patriarchy on steroids. You know, this is the strong representation of what unchecked, rich, male, white power looks like.
Yes. What would you like people to take away from your book? If there was one thing that you could have them just say, yes, I got it. This is what Sally's making me understand or giving me to understand.
I would like them to take away anger, and the anger at the fact that we have been denied this history. We've not been told who we are so that we can know where we need to go. And that anger is what has always fueled the women's movement. The anger that is, we need to pick up the mantle and move forward.
Gosh, on those words, I'm going to have to say thank you so much for writing the book, putting the book together. And thank you for spending time with me on the air. I really appreciate it. I have been talking to Sally Roche Wagner. Her book is called The Women's Suffrage Movement. And yeah, this is something you've got to get yourself. It really is. It's a wonderful read. Sally, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you, Norman. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you, Sally. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
I wish I knew how it would feel. to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world to hear.
Ike Riley, star of Tropical Heatwave and longtime WMNF favorite, is returning to Tampa and the Attic in Ybor City on March 28th.
She haunts my hideout.
You don't want to miss the show opener at 8 p.m., Siobhan Philidor.
It's time to let go.
That's Ike Riley at the Attic in Ybor City, Thursday night, March 28th. Capacity is limited, so get your tickets now at WMNF.org.
Yes, I couldn't resist just putting a little bit of Nina Simone in there to finish up my conversation with Sally Roche Wagner. What a lovely lady. And I know I said it a number of times now, it really is such an incredible book. Also, Elaine Weiss I had on my program last week talking about a very similar subject, but from a different point of view. Both ladies, just marvelous ladies and wonderful books. If you want more information, you can go to lifeelsewhere.co. Yes, that's right. C-O. This is Midpoints with me, Norman B. Thank you for listening to WMNF 88.5. And if you're just joining us, we've just been talking about the women's suffrage movement with Sally Roche Wagner. Now, I want to hear from you. Here's the telephone number. Make sure you've got it down correctly. 813-239-9663. Here's the text number. 813-433-0885. And you can email at, well, DJ at WMNF.org. Too many ads there. I want now to talk about women in politics. There are a record number of women running for the office of president in 2020. Let's talk about why. Why do you think so many women are running? What has changed? I want to know what you think. You just heard from Sally Roche Wagner talking about the suffrage movement. Is that something which people are more aware of now? Has something changed? What's going on? Why is Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Tulsi Gabbard, why are they running? Why, how did it happen that they're all running together this time around? We've never seen this before. It really is. It's phenomenal, and it's wonderful, and it's historic. I'd quite like to see even more women running. From my point of view, I think the more the merrier. It's going to sort itself out, of course. We were just having a little chat in the studio just a moment ago with Frank, my esteemed board operator here, who does an absolutely terrific job. We were just discussing about who is going to be the front runners. I don't know that we can say that yet. It seems far too early. There's so many people running in the on the Democratic ticket. But the big standouts, of course, right now are the ladies that are running, the women that are running. Why? It's a question I think we need to think about. Why are so many women running? Is there something that's happened, something that changed? Is it because of Mr. Trump? Is there a backlash? Is there a feeling in the air since the Me Too movement? What do you account for it? Why do you think there are this number of women? Could there be more? The numbers at five right now, could we see somebody else step in? Who would you like to see that's not running? Who would you like to see run if they haven't actually put their name forward yet? And I'm sure that there's some other people out there you can think of. So why are so many people running for president that are women? I do think that we need to think about this as we go closer into the actual election season. Of course, we're far off yet. It seems to start earlier and earlier. One election's over, and all of a sudden we start counting the people who are possibly going to run. And then they start putting their hat into the ring, and then we start thinking about them and talking about them. There's a lot to discuss with Elizabeth Warren, with Kamala Harris, with Kirsten Gillibrand, Tulsi Gabbard, and Amy Klobuchar. Why are so many women running this time around? Last time around, we had, of course, Hillary. And when we talk about Hillary, it seems to bring up just an awful lot of, I don't know, some people. I was talking to somebody just the other day who's a big Bernie supporter. She happens to be a big Bernie supporter, a political activist. And she was saying to me that Bernie was treated so unfairly. And she thinks that this time around, Bernie has a really good chance. And I said to her, what do you think of all these women that are running? And she said, I think it's great, but it's tokenism. And I hadn't heard that before. Tokenism? I don't know if that I agree with that. I don't know. So, are women running just as tokens? Not something that I would have suggested, not something I would say. I like the idea that women are running. I think maybe, as I already said, maybe more women could run. Maybe more women could show us what they've got. I think it would be a terrific idea. I would like to hear from you. And I know that you have opinions about this. I know that you have some thoughts about why is it that women are now taking up the mantle? Why do we have five esteemed women running for the office of president? Here's the text number, 813-433-0885. You can email me at dj@wmnf.org. Okay, and here is the telephone number. This gets you right into the studio. 813-239-9663. Since the last election, here we are in a strange situation right now with a president who really, I think by all accounts, didn't want to be president, never thought he was going to be president. And we have a man who has got more, I guess, more press than any president in history. Not for the things that he's done well, but the things he's done wrong. There's lots and lots of criticism of Mr. Trump. And is the criticism of Mr. Trump one of the reasons why so many women are running right now? Because of his misogynist... his misogynist stand? Is that the way to put it? I'm not sure I know, but I'd like to hear from you. What do you think? What do you think? That there is a reason why more women are running this time? Can we sort of narrow it back to Mr. Trump? Can we bring it back to what happened with Hillary? Do more people think now that are women that they have a better opportunity? The landscape is better. There's more acceptance for women running. There's more possibility that the nation as a whole will look at a woman as being presidents. After all, other countries have had female leaders. Of course, my own country, the UK. Let's go back to Israel. Go to my ear. Way back when, there's been a lot of leaders or presidents or prime ministers in many countries around the world. New Zealand, of course. Let's find out what you think. I'm going to go to the phones, Frank, if that's okay with you. I'm going to find out what people think. I'm going to give the number out once again in case you didn't get it down. I'm going to give it to you. 813-239-9663 is the number, telephone number. And the text number is 813-433-0885. Let's go to Lakeland and talk to Micheline. Or Micheline? Micheline. Micheline.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Did I mispronounce your name? Because sometimes spelling is sort of
like the tire, Micheline.
Micheline. Okay, Micheline. Are you from France?
Yes, I am.
Well, good for you. Thank you so much. How long have you been in this lovely country?
Oh, since 1967.
Oh my goodness gracious! Oh my.
But I go back to France all the time because my whole family is in France.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, so you heard my question. Women, why are women running for president, do you think?
I think it's because, since I am one too, they are more sensitive to everything, just business, like men are made to be more business, you know, running the show or something. But women add, gentleness to things, and I don't know, I think that's what it is. There's something, you know, it helps if you put a little more kindness.
Yes. Do you think, let me ask you this, do you think that a woman president would be more kind? Would we have a more kind world if a woman was president of the United States?
I don't know. I think it might be. I mean, it would have to be a tough woman with all the sensitivity of a woman.
Ah, yes. Yes, that's so very well put there, Micheline. I really appreciate you calling from Lakeland this afternoon. Thank you so much. Let's go to Chuck in Tampa. Chuck, what do you think? You've got some points on ladies, why they're running for president?
Well, I want to go back to the Bernie point about how, you know, you said they thought he got a bad end of the deal. And I would agree that he totally got railroaded by the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I would also agree who else got railroaded was the Trump voters when they went and started this Russia investigation and they spoon-fed everybody this Russian diet for 2 years. And now we're slowly finding out that that wasn't the case. And I think as a Trump voter, I feel like we never got to really enjoy our win. It was just always, well, Russia, Russia, Russia for 2 years. And now we're finding out basically there's pretty much, it was all a hoax, just like how Bernie, you know.
Let me ask you this, Chuck. It sounds to me like you, from what you're saying, that you're a conservative. So let me ask you this.
Absolutely.
I don't see any ladies on the conservative side running. Why do you think that is?
Well, I have no idea. When Sarah Palin came out, they crucified her. I mean, she was stupid. She was an idiot. So they, you know, I remember those days. I actually felt terrible for her, how they treated her. And you surely remember how they treated Sarah Palin when she came out, correctly?
I certainly do, but I'm interested.
Why would women run to the forefront to be treated like that? I mean, they went so far to make fun of her mentally ill child. I mean, it's bad.
I'm interested in why women are not running on the conservative side, but I don't think it's because of Sarah Palin. I'm almost sure about that.
I don't know why they're not running.
Yeah.
I really have no idea.
Well, Pachak, I think you made some good points. I really appreciate it. Let's go to Sarasota. Joyce in Sarasota, what do you think? Why are so many women running for the Democratic ticket?
Well, I think it's a backlash because, you know, obviously you're looking at somebody like Mitch McConnell and you're looking at the people who are in charge, have been in charge in the Republican Party for a while, and they're not doing the people's work. So, you know, what we really want, and I'm a female, I'm a Bernie bro, okay? I'm in my 60s.
That's, by the way, Joyce, that's the new 40. You know that, don't you?
No, I don't, because physically I don't feel the way I did.
Oh, okay.
But I have to say that, you know, if we're going to bring this down to genderism, and you're British, okay, you're British. You remember Maggie Thatcher.
Of course.
Okay, she was like a man. She was a horror. I mean, I remember one of her famous quotes of, you know, socialism, you know, being generous with other people's
money. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, she was a horror. I lived in your country during that time.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yes, it was a disaster.
Yes.
And then you look at somebody like Janet Reno.
Yes.
Okay, if you can remember going back to Waco, you know,
sure,
everybody into, you know, blow up children.
Yes.
So it's more about issues, and it's very much about who they're taking money from. That's where I look at.
Okay, this is interesting. Now, you're taking us in a different direction there, Joyce. So you're talking about,
I think that should be the bottom line here. In order to do the people's work, in order to do the work that we are voting them in for, okay, you've got to know who their handlers are or who they have, you know, who they have to kowtow to.
Kowtow to,
and
yes.
That's what I look at. So if I look at somebody like Kamala Harris, if I look at somebody like Klobuchar, I'm going to study that very carefully. Harris has an abhorrent record in California. She's not some wonderful liberal. She had women locked up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Mothers locked up for their truant children, two of which died in jail.
Yes. Do you think, I've got to ask you this question, I want to get some more calls, and you've made some very interesting points, Joyce. Do you think there is a possibility this time around a woman could be president?
To me, that, you know, it would be fine as long as, like I'm saying, this is the criteria that affects me.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people don't have the time or the inclination to do their homework.
Yeah.
So look up, you know, these things. Elizabeth Warren, I think, could be a possibility, but not as president this time around. I think a great team would be Bernie and Elizabeth. I think that would be a real win.
I've heard that from a number of people. I'm going to ask you one more question, and I want to make it really quick. And that is, give me three things, three important things that you're going to be voting on. Based on what? Three important things for you, for Joyce.
Okay, well, obviously Medicare for All.
Yeah.
I think that this should be run the way your country runs it and the way many countries run it.
Yes.
And I think that's everybody's primary concern right now. That, I think, let's see. Oh, LGBTQ rights.
Okay.
Obviously, the second one, or maybe the top one, should be the environment.
The environment, okay.
Getting into a Green New Deal.
Yes.
But, you know, at this point in time, we're all strapped with medical bills, and, you know, we're how many hundreds of dollars away from bankruptcy?
Yes.
So, you know, personally, that would be the top of my list, and it would be the environment, and then it would be a whole slew of everything.
Joyce, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it, and very good points indeed. We're talking about women running for the office of president. My question to you is, why are so many women running? And then I guess we can sort of follow that up with, who do you think has a chance? Let's talk to Eddie in Tampa. Eddie, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm good, Eddie. Let's hear what you have to say. What do you think? Women running for office.
Women running for office. I want to get back to why no women running on the conservative side versus the Democrat side.
Right, okay.
And my belief is because the way they're being treated on the Democratic side, that men treat them equally versus on the other side, the men are very controlled.
Yeah. You're making a good point. You're making a very good point.
And you can see that with the president we have today. And they're just following suit. They're keeping their women in their place. And that's all I have to say about it.
Well, you said in a very short time there, Eddie, you said a great deal, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much. Eddie from Tampa there. That is a good question, and I did bring it up just a little while ago with our conservative caller, and that is, why are there no women running on the other side? Why is there no Republican woman that's running for president? Not that I know of right now. Do you know of any? I haven't heard of anyone. Well, we've got five candidates running right now for the Democratic ticket. And I'm wondering, my question to you is, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people running, even if just in a regular election, five is that's quite a lot of people. Of course, you have a lot of people that are going to drop out as we get closer to the actual, that we get the debates and all the hoopla that goes on. But there's a lot of people running on the Democratic side right now, on the Democratic ticket, and five of those are women. I'm wondering, was there something that happened? Is it because of a backlash against what is happening right now with Mr. Trump? Or is it something else? Is it before that? Is it the Me Too movement? Is there something else that happened? Is it women are feeling more emboldened, if that's the right way to say it? What do you think? I would love to hear your opinion about this, because I think it's something that's going to be discussed more and more as we get closer to the election, even though, as I mentioned, it's far off right now. But it's not going to be that far away. We're going to be talking about it a lot in the coming months. Telephone number, 813-239-9663. And the text number is 813-433-0885. And of course, you can email me at dj@wmnf.org. So let's find out. Let's see if I've got any text messages here. Susie says, and she says in the email, she says, I really think it's important that women are running. I'd like to see all of the candidates be women. Susie, that's not a bad idea. I kind of like that. Thank you very much for that one. And here's one from Jonathan, who says, my guess is the women that are running right now felt that they had to do something because they really don't like what's going on the conservative side. Well, there you go, Jonathan. Probably a good point there. Let's hear from you on the telephone lines. I've got a number of calls open, right? A number of lines open. 813-239-9663. And the text number is 813-433-0885. Talking about women running for office, what do you think? Is it something changed? Did something happen? And why are there no conservative women running? The gentleman earlier on said that he thought that people mocked Sarah Palin and that she got a bad deal. And he was a conservative. He was talking from a conservative point of view. He also said, if I call him right, he said that he didn't get what he thought he was going to get when he voted for Mr. Trump. That's a whole nother story, of course, but I think a lot of people will agree that we got probably a lot more than we expected with Mr. Trump in many ways. So what do you think? And could a woman like our French lady that called in from Lakeland, Micheline, she said that she thinks that women could give a more gentle atmosphere. So let's find out. Let's take some more calls. I've got a number of calls lined up here. Gulf City, Jim, good afternoon to you. Welcome to WMNF.
I am sorry, you got scrambled there. Are you talking to me?
I am talking to you, Jim, yes.
Okay, Norman.
Yes.
Yeah. This resurgence or resurgence of women in politics is, to me, it's great. You know, I grew up sort of on the cusp between the old ways and the new ways.
Okay, yeah.
And, it took some adjusting to, women's lib. And,
let me ask you, Jim, let me interrupt you there and ask you, what do you mean by old ways and new ways?
Well, I would say sort of slightly post-Victorian morality and fighting modernism.
Was that partly to do with religion? Was it the way you were raised with any religion?
Not so much. It was just the way things were done, you know.
Uh-huh,
just,
yeah.
Yeah, that's just how it was. You know, the man went to work and
right.
The mom stayed home and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You probably won't get the reference, but Leave It to Beaver.
No, I get the reference. Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah.
And so I was caught really in that changing of the guard, if you will.
Right.
It took a while to adjust, you know, because I was brought up one way and now I had to believe a different way.
Yes.
But to me, we men have made a terrible hash of it, and I think women are suitable. I'm the father of two powerful young women, married to an overly powerful old woman.
Jim, goodness.
And I really believe that the women need a shot at it because we've screwed it up royally, you know.
Yeah.
And in various cultures, women are seen in the goddesses and so forth as the creators and the nurturers, and we men are the warriors and destroyers.
Yes, you'd make a point. Yes, Jim.
And So if we're going to have anything like sanity, we really need to have a decent balance, and women coming into that, you know, filling that role. I'm really enheartened by some of the powerful women we have. AOC, of course.
Of course, yes.
And even in broadcasting.
Well, you're making some good points, Jim. I really appreciate you calling. Thank you so very much. I want to try and squeeze in as many calls as we can before the top of the hour and we go to news. Mark in Tampa. Excuse me. Sorry there, Frank. Bob in Tampa. Let's go to you and see what you have to say. Hello, Bob.
Yeah, I'm here. The reason why there's no conservative women running is because nobody wants the primary Trump.
Ah. Yeah, now you see, now you've opened a whole can of worms there, haven't you? Yeah. Go into that.
And if they were going to primary Trump, I don't see any Republican women that
right.
I would even vote for.
Right. Yes. You just opened up. I wish we had more time to go into that a little further. That's really interesting. Bob, thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. I'm going to try and now see if we can go back to Mark that we had before, and I think somehow we lost him there in the confusion of telephone lines. Mark, very quickly, what do you have to say?
Real quick, one thing I think on the conservative side, a lot of conservatives are also in the realm of church-going conservative.
Yes.
And just on the basis of somebody who's grown up in the church, not saying that I necessarily would be on a very strong conservative side, but there is the men shall lead as pastoral or as seniors versus women.
I wish we had more time, Mark. Sorry for this. Are you making a good point? We've got to have to go, unfortunately. I'm sorry about that. I want to say a big thank you to Patty for running the phones, and I want to say a huge big thank you and a bit of a hug there to Frank Knox, who works under incredible pressure. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Norman B. You can catch my show, Life Elsewhere, on HD3, Sundays at 12 noon. Information about it is up at lifeelsewhere.co. Have yourself a wonderful, wonderful weekend.